right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and my guest this hour is Eric Garris from antiwar.com. I gotta tell you first, I got my brand new website up. It's weekendinterviewshow.com. Sorry, such a long URL, but somebody already had interview show, so I had to put the weekend in front of it. And that's my brand new website. And I have the archives of my three previous interviews, and Mike Dixon and Eric Garris' interviews will be up there shortly after today's show. And so now, in introduction to my friend Eric Garris, I got to say my homepage is antiwar.com. They have the top, oh, I don't know, 200 or 300 headlines every day from around the world. And they have some of the greatest in-house writers, Justin Raimondo, Alan Bach, Matthew Barganier, Nebojša Samalić, on and on, Ron Hacohen. They've got some great in-house writers. Also, Ivan Elin from the Center on Peace and Liberty writes for them. And it's an excellent website. I suggest everybody read it at least a couple of times a week, if not every day. And with that, I'd like to welcome the director of antiwar.com, Eric Garris. Welcome to the show, sir.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on. Now, antiwar.com, you guys have been doing really good lately. I think I read somewhere you get 50,000-something unique visitors every single day.
That's our average currently, is about 50,000 unique visitors a day. We've actually peaked at 148,000 about 6 weeks ago.
Wow.
So depending on events and things that are going on, we can get quite a lot more than that. But we're at about double what we were a year ago.
Wow, and a year ago is when the war was, you know, really on.
That's right.
It's slowed down now, so that really shows some progress there. Now, I have to say, Eric, when I first heard of your website, I thought antiwar.com, what's this, the pro-socialism website or something?
No, no, socialism is what creates most wars.
Oh, I see. So it's not a bastion of pseudo-liberalism, then?
No, not at all. Classical liberalism, that we're a bastion of, but that's more of what you would call paleoconservatism today.
Well, now that's interesting. What exactly are you talking about? Classical liberalism, paleoconservatism. What does all this mean?
Well, today, I mean, it's been quite a while since liberal and conservative meant what they originally meant, and it's gotten farther and farther away from that, to the point today where you have big government conservatives and big government liberals. And the foundations of both the classical liberal tradition and the original non-neoconservative, the paleo, the opposite of neoconservatives, the paleoconservatives, were both small government, pro-individual rights, and they shared that. And today, what represents the mainstream of the conservative movements, are, in effect the neocons, are for big government. And you see that they are, you know, George Bush, for example, is the biggest spending president that we've had since LBJ.
Yep, $2.5 trillion budget this year.
That's right. We do record deficits. And fiscal conservatism is really out the window. It's no longer on the agenda. And even when you look at the rhetoric of the so-called conservatives today, they sound more and more like liberals. When they talk about Iraq these days, since they've given up on the facade of WMDs and some of the other facades, they now talk about things like, oh, well, we're creating better schools and we're liberating women and we're...
All right, hey, Eric, we'll be right back. It's break time. We'll be right back. It's Eric Garris from antiwar.com. Back to the Weekend Interview Show. All you individuals out there across the land, it's the Republic Broadcasting Network. My guest is the director of antiwar.com, Eric Garris. He's here to represent liberalism as it was before Karl Marx and conservatism as it was before William F. Buckley. So antiwar.com is, I believe, the vanguard, really, of the libertarian anti-war movement in this country. And particularly, I suppose, your main writer there, your journalistic director, Justin Raimondo, writes three times a week, right?
Yes.
And the column is Behind the Headlines. For those of you who have never read Justin Raimondo, I suggest not only do you go read what's up there now, but take a stroll through those archives. And I think it will greatly increase your understanding of what's going on in the world. So Eric, when we went to the break, you were talking about the Republican Party and how they're just the party of big government and war, really. Nothing conservative about them at all, really.
Well, that's true, and unfortunately, the Democratic Party is also the party of big government and war. They just have slightly different flavors. And when you look at, for example, Kerry on the issue of Iraq, Kerry has recently been attacking George Bush for wanting to pull troops out of Iraq. And they kind of go back and forth. So a few weeks ago, Kerry was attacking Bush for wanting to pull troops out of Iraq. And then last week, the tables were turned. Kerry was saying, oh, he wants to bring troops out within 6 months, and Bush was saying, well, that's ridiculous. So it's like a game they're playing. When they both know that they have no intention of getting out of Iraq anytime in the near future. At this point, they're debating whether or not to pull out of Germany 59 years after the occupation started.
Right, and even then it's only going to be probably half of them anyway.
That's right, and yet Kerry is against it. And enough of the Republicans are against it as well that it probably isn't even going to happen.
Yeah, well, and even if it is, it's supposed to take place over the next 10 years, so.
Right, and we're not talking about really bringing them home. For example, they're talking about setting up 5 bases in Azerbaijan, you know, and places like that. They're going to take these troops and distribute them into different places around the world. We're just going to expand our reach.
See, the problem here is that the United States is, what, like 6% of the population of the world? Do we even have enough people to have all this empire?
Well, that is a question, and the big question is, what does this do for America? Because, Pete, you can argue back and forth, well, the Iraqis are better off now than they were under Saddam. That might be true. It might not be true. I suspect that it depends on who you are.
Well, and I suspect it remains to be seen, really, what's going
to
happen.
Well, yes. But to me, that's a secondary issue. Because clearly, the war against Iraq is bad for America. It is making government bigger. It's increasing spending. It's increasing inflation. It is going to have very destructive effects on our economy, and it's also bringing terrorism, inviting terrorists to this shore, to our shores.
So the empire building, you feel, is really weakening America, not really projecting.
Yes, and empires do weaken countries. The British Empire ended up weakening Britain. The Roman Empire ended up weakening Rome. Empires do not strengthen the economies or the cultures at home.
Right. Well, and back then they could at least take all the loot home, but we can't do that. You know, with Al Jazeera TV and whatever, we can't even keep the loot from the countries that we occupy. We have to pretend we're liberating them and spend all the money ourselves.
Yeah, and look at, you know, people said, well, we have to go into Iraq to get cheap oil. That certainly isn't coming true.
Now, I might have bought that conspiracy theory if the theory was we went in to keep their oil off the market to keep the prices high.
Oh, I don't think that we went in because of oil, but I think that there are people in this country who bought that argument.
Oh, I know. I wasn't arguing against you. I was just saying.
It's a good idea because of that.
Right. I was just saying that. You know, obviously that's silly, the idea that we're going for cheap oil. It's done nothing but raise the price of oil, this invasion.
That's right.
Yeah. Hey, Eric, you want to take some calls?
Sure, why not?
All right. Hey, if anybody else wants to get involved on the air, it's 800-313-9443. Let's talk to Bob.
Hey, Scott.
Welcome
to
the show.
I want to thank you for the show today, man, because I'm Justin Raimondo's number one fan, and I got to tell you, that earlier when you were discussing whether you should or shouldn't vote,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't condone the system by doing it, except maybe if Raimondo ran for president, I might go ahead and reestablish myself within the matrix. But, you know, I wanted to say that Eric had made a point earlier about, you know, big government and how the party system, it's become, you know, in my opinion, I remember seeing a guy one day, I go, man, we don't have a left and a right. We have left and further left. And you know, one of the major problems with this war in Iraq, as I see it, that Eric didn't mention, even though he mentioned about 10, is the internal oppression, the internal security that is coming down on this country, where we're going to have National Guard troops on the streets, and they're not even closing down the borders. You know, we, you know, this is not about, you know, this empire that you were discussing. This empire isn't being established to protect and serve the rights of the people. This empire is being established to take them away. And, you know, I wanted to ask Eric his opinion on something. Eric, do you think that the 9/11 situation and the subsequent war was designed and implemented by Islam?
That's a very, I mean, that's not a question I can answer yes or no. I mean, the fact is that many, many events led up to this.
Do you think that there could be an international intelligence conglomeration that have foisted this upon America?
Well, yes, there could be a lot more than meets the eye. However, even without that, the fact is that there are a number of interests that get together in this country that want to bring a more repressive government, a stronger government that takes away individual rights. And anybody knows that the best way to do that is through a threat of war.
Do you think
that's how it always happens. Government at home always grows, individual rights always decline during a state of war, and they can use the argument of war or the threat of terrorism to do just about anything.
Well,
and people will go for it.
Do you see the threat as being more national or more international in scope as far as this oppression and, you know, terrorizing? I think the whole world's being terrorized.
Well, yes, it's definitely international, but we need to stop internationalizing. We need to stop making problems bigger than they are. One of the problems is, you know, if you look at World War I. World War I happened because there were all these little countries that had alliances, that had mutual defense pacts with other countries, so that once you had two little countries go to war with each other, it cascaded until all of Europe was at war. And that happened very quickly. And that's the kind of situation that we have today in the war. We are trying to set up defense pacts so that if anyone is attacked anywhere, we take a side.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
You know, by the way, I wanted to mention that I found your guy's site through another site, at J. Orlin Graby.
Oh, yes.
And I go there as my second stop every day, and then I always end up at Raimondo's page because he's got some article on there that he's taken and posted on his site.
Oh, great.
And you guys have a great site. And, you know, it takes people willing to stand up and tell it like it is. And one last question, and I'll get off the line here and let you guys go on the program. What do you think, or why do you think nothing is being done to Sandy Berger after he goes in and steals documents out of the National Archives that are above top secret?
Well, there's a lot of people who, you know, who it's amazing that nothing's done to them. But clearly, I mean, he probably has stuff on them that is preventing them from coming down on him. I mean, it's a lot of this is, you know, people on the inside end up having a good deal of control on each other.
So it's a government that wheels greased by mutual blackmail.
Exactly.
Sure, it's the
exactly.
same thing as the 9/11 Commission, where it's bipartisan,
right, exactly.
Not so that they'll both go after each other, but so that they'll both protect each other.
Right.
Scott, thanks for the show.
Really good. Any real blame. Hey, thank you for the call, Bob. Anybody else wants to get involved on the air, it's 800-313-9443. The guest is Eric Gares. He is the webmaster and director of the best website on the whole World Wide Web, antiwar.com.
Oh, well, thank you.
Oh,
I should mention, you know, you told people that they should go there at least twice a week. If they only go there twice a week, you need to go through and click on the previous 7 days, because we change the entire front page every single day, and it's updated throughout the day. So if you want to get the best foreign policy digest on a daily basis, antiwar.com is the place to go.
Sure, and that's why to just go ahead and make it your home page. That way, anytime you click on a new E to open up a window to go searching for anything, you always see the new headlines, if any news is breaking or anything like that, right there at the top. And you know, another thing, Eric, if I can compliment you guys, is your columnists, almost all of them, put, especially Romano, put links all throughout their columns, so that every assertion that they make, you can click right on the evidence.
Well, that's one of the key things about the internet, and that's one of the that's the main thing that we are trying to put forward is information. We want people to be able to find information and be able to check it out and make sure that it's real, because there's so much out there that it's hard to get through. And if you don't, if you just hear people make assertions without knowing whether there's any backup, often it's hard to judge, and sometimes people get the wrong idea just because they believe something that they've read, or maybe they don't believe something that's real. By having links, I think that's a really important thing, because it's like having a full reference library within each article.
Indeed. And we're almost out of time before this break coming up. So
okay.
If you could, real quick, just list for me who writes for antiwar.com.
Oh, okay.
Raimondo and Bach.
Justin Raimondo. Let me just get the list in front of me so that it makes it easy. Justin Raimondo, Alan Bach, who is a editorial director of the Orange County Register. Nebojša Malik, who writes on the Balkans. Ivan Eland, who writes on foreign policy. Sasha Matuzak, who writes from China. Crosswall Bidwai, who writes from India. Ron Hacohen, who writes from Israel. Matthew Bargagnier, who writes from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Boy, can't say that. Joseph Stromberg, who's an expert historian, and some of our other columnists. Pat Buchanan, Juan Cole, an Iraq expert. Christopher DeLiso, who writes from the Balkans. Mike Ewens. Aaron Glantz, who writes from Iraq. Dar Jamal, who writes from Iraq. Kathy Kelly, who writes from Iraq and elsewhere. Jim Loeb, former CIA analyst Ray McGovern, Representative Ron Paul, Don Pilger.
All right, hang tight, Eric. We'll be right back. It's the Weekend Interview Show. Individuals and individualists, this is the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton. And I went to the Libertarian Party Convention of Texas at Bryan College Station in June. And during Ron Paul's speech, of course he was there. And Ron Paul said, listen, if you guys really want to know what's going on with American foreign policy, you've got to start reading antiwar.com. And I know he wasn't just saying that because they post his articles there. Ron Paul's not near so vain. And he's right. Antiwar.com has all the headlines that you need every single day, updated constantly, and some of the greatest writers of all. And my guest this hour is Eric Gares. He's the director and webmaster of Antiwar.com. If anybody wants to get involved on the air, the number is 1-800-313-9443. And if you missed most of the interview and you want to go back and hear any of this later on, it's weekendinterviewshow.com. And let's go to Bob in Round Rock, Texas, for Eric Gares. Welcome
Hello?
To the show, Bob.
Hello?
You're on the air, Bob.
Hi. I'm a little bit confused. When we talk about anti-war, does that mean the absence of war, or does that mean our absence of involvement in a war?
if we are against war, but we are against most of the wars that are taking place in the world today, because they're not just wars. They're wars of aggression.
Okay, so you made a real good analogy about World War One. If the United Nations, then referred to as the League of Nations, when they signed an armistice on November the 11th, the United States and other countries dismantled its fleets to 40%, its military, but Hitler, Mussolini, and Tojo built the militaries of Japan and those countries, and the League of Nations did nothing. These people were violating the treaties, and nobody did anything to hold their feet to the fire. Just as the current United Nations, there's been dozens of resolutions and hundreds of violations by Saddam Hussein, and from my point of view, if the United Nations had done its GD job, Bush or the United States wouldn't have had it gone in there. And they've allowed this to happen.
The United Nations is just a bunch of bullies. The United Nations is just a bunch of countries who get together and say, we have a number of interests in oppressing and interfering in a lot of things that are going on in the world. And we're going to get together and we will support your intervention and you support our intervention, and it's just one big intervention club. I mean, the so-called resolutions the resolutions against Saddam by the UN, I think that those were acts of war. I mean, we were starving his people. You know,
Eric, that's good because Saddam Hussein was Adolf Hitler and he had to be stopped, right, Bob?
No, he was the Hitler of the week. The fact is, Saddam Hussein had the same substances that a third, according to David Kay, who was the top weapons inspector for the CIA, according to David Kay, one third of all countries on Earth have the same substances that Saddam Hussein had.
Okay, Bob, go ahead. Make your argument about how Hussein was Hitler and he had to be stopped.
So you wouldn't consider an attempted assassination of a former president to be an act of war?
Well, first of all, I do not see that that happened.
I see.
Just because George Bush says that it happened, I don't necessarily believe him.
And in fact, Bob, hang on one sec. I can say for myself personally, I've interviewed Frederick Whitehurst, the former director of the FBI Crime Lab, and he told me on my radio show, on my old show, that he did the tests on the bomb material for that alleged assassination attempt, and that he determined exactly what kind of explosive it was, and how they went and lied about what kind of explosive it was so that they could try to tie it to some Iraqi explosive that they had found in Malaysia a couple years before, et cetera, et cetera. It was all BS. You can go read Seymour Hersh did a ton of work dismantling that preposterous theory.
Let me say something. Okay, as far as any disagreements between Saddam Hussein and Bush Sr., they were basically disagreements among former business partners. I mean, the United States armed Saddam Hussein. We kept him in power. We helped him through the Iran-Iraq war. We gave him the poison gas that many people say he used on the Kurds, although the CIA says it was Iranian gas used on the Kurds. Both sides used gas. The Kurds died. I'm sure that they were both guilty. However, the United States in that particular battle was on the side of the Iraqis, on the side of Saddam Hussein, and against the Kurds. Okay?
But going back to the attempted assassination, then you're saying that the Clinton administration orchestrated that evidence so that he could fire some cruise missiles off and act like a commander-in-chief.
I don't know if Clinton himself did it, but I know that the guy who tested the explosives and determined what molecules the explosives were made out of told the truth, and they lied about what he said. And the evidence, go read The New Yorker by Seymour Hersh, wrote all about this alleged assassination attempt. It's completely bunk. And yes, if it's a big surprise to you, Bob, Bill Clinton is a liar and murderer. I hope you're not shocked.
Why is it that the United States has the right to assassinate other world leaders, and yet if another world leader does the same to us, we can attack his country and kill hundreds of thousands of innocent people through military action and sanctions?
And also, I love the whole bit, Bob, about how the UN is bad for not doing enough. That's a very conservative critique you got there, pal. We'll be right back. It's the Weekend Interview Show.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Buddy, I'm Scott Horton, and it's the Weekend Interview Show. Antiwar.com is a great site, and I'm not just saying that because they've ran so many of my former interviews. I really mean it. I want to welcome back to the show my friend Eric Garris, the director of Antiwar.com.
Yeah, and I'd like to just add to the last thing you said before we went to the break. When you see conservatives falling back on things like the United Nations or women's rights in Iraq or Afghanistan or better schools in Iraq or Afghanistan.
Or even Bill Clinton said so.
Right, exactly. When you see them falling back on that sort of thing, I watched Tucker Carlson and say talking like he supports the UN. I mean, they've lost their philosophical grounding. There's no more fiscal conservatism. There's very little of anything except war.
Now, Eric, there is something. I understand Bob's frustration a little bit because, and you know, this is something that we kind of talked about at the beginning, that When you name your website antiwar.com, people's first image is of some white kid with dreadlocks sitting block in the street, and they assume it's kind of a left-wing thing. And I think you really got to take the time to make the point that you're not just a bunch of sissy, panty-waist pacifists down at antiwar.com,
are you? No, I mean, people go, and you'll see one of our top columnists is Pat Buchanan. I mean...
Oh, we all know what a sissy he is.
Yeah.
And why is Pat Buchanan anti-war? Isn't he a right-wing warmonger type like the rest of these guys?
No, he's a right-wing anti-interventionist. Actually, he's somewhat of an isolationist. He is opposed to the war in Iraq. He is opposed to our aggressive moves against Iran. If you look at his column that will be coming out on our site on Monday, he has a very good critique of American foreign policy versus Iran. Basically, he agrees with our analysis that we are destroying America by trying to build an empire at the same time that we're inviting terrorism at home.
Well, and we're definitely inviting terrorism at home. Now,
if you want to read what he says on our site, go to antiwar.com/Buchanan, and you can read Pat's column.
Yeah, and they really are good columns. In fact, I want to ask you a little bit about Pat, because it kind of confuses me. I read some of the stuff he writes for antiwar.com, and then I see him on, MSNBC or whatever.
Right.
And he doesn't seem nearly as anti-war on TV as he does in print.
No, and I suspect he has a deal that he's supposed to present a certain conservative forum that is what is part of what, you know, he feels that, he needs to do in order to keep his job there. I don't really know. I really never discussed it with him. But there is a bit of a difference sometimes. You won't see him taking so much bad positions on MSNBC as you won't see him taking the really good ones.
Right, right. And now for Bob, if he's still listening out there, you know, you have to ask the question about what's so conservative about George Bush by any measure. I mean, from everything from gun control to socialized health care to his $2.5 trillion budget to his Wilsonian dream of a, quote, George Bush, our president, global democratic revolution. What's so conservative about that? I can't think of a thing.
Well, the point is, a lot of these people, you know, he probably has listened to Michael Moore too much.
Right.
You know, it's like people don't often... You know, often you'll hear a debate between a Kerry supporter and a Bush supporter, and the Kerry supporter will say, Bush, da-da-da-da-da-da, and the Kerry, and vice versa. The thing is, I usually agree with both of them when they're criticizing the other side.
Right, right.
You know, But, you know, you have people like Michael Moore and a lot of Kerry supporters saying that George Bush is the most right-wing president we've ever had.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's ridiculous. That's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard.
Well, and this is something I really have to deal with a lot, being accused of being one side or the other. During the Clinton years, everybody called me a right-winger, and nowadays I'm a left-winger, and who knows what I'll be day after tomorrow. I got accused of being a neo-Nazi and a liberal pinhead in the same night last week. So
yeah, and you know, it does change. I mean, back in 1999, when antiwar.com was fighting the war in Kosovo, you know, we were constantly accused of being right wing, and you know, Free Republic, which is a very prominent, used to be more prominent bulletin board, loved us, and we were like the stars of Free Republic.
Right.
Today we've been purged from Free Republic.
I used to kind of like Free Republic. I used to kind of like Free Republic back when Bill Clinton was in power.
Uh huh.
Not so much. Hey, let's talk to John in Washington State. John, welcome to the show.
Hi. I just wanted to. Well, first off, the I'm sure everyone's noticed how both Republican and Democrat alike have taken to using the word democracy or our great democracy or pure
democracy
or constitutional democracy. That's the one that really knocks me out. But that's where they've gone with this. And I just wanted to make a couple of assertions here and read a couple of quotes that are very serious and one that's funny. And the first one says, it was by Aristotle, and he said that an absolute democracy, no more than an absolute monarchy, is not to be reckoned among the legitimate forms of government. They think it rather the corruption and degeneracy than the sound constitution of a republic. And then you go on to one that I'm sure you've heard where it says a democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse from the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that the democracy always collapses over loose fiscal policy, which is always followed by a dictatorship. That's Alexander Tyler. This is where our politicians have gone. This is why they're all wishy-washy. The lines are blurred. There's really not much difference between them. It's because now they're feeding at the trough, and they've learned that they've got all these goopy-headed people out there that believe it's a democracy, so they're going to go there. And here's the last one that really tickles me, and then I'll jump off of here. It says, oppression and harassment is a small price to pay to live in the land of the free.
See Montgomery Burns.
Montgomery Burns, off of The Simpsons. You've got it. Oh, well, you guys have a great afternoon. Good show. I really enjoyed it.
Who said that? Okay.
Yeah, that was See Montgomery Burns. That's the episode where they steal the $1 trillion bill and they go to Cuba. And he says, he's talking to Castro, and he says, hey, is it okay if we come and live in your socialist paradise? And Castro says, you talking about Cuba? That's my favorite. Yeah, and you know, it's interesting about the whole democracy-republic thing, because it seems to me, and I could be wrong, but it seems to me that what we don't have really is a majority getting its tyranny over everyone. What we really have is a tiny little minority of elite who can fool 51% into believing whatever they want them to believe to get their special interests taken care of. Is that not the case, Eric?
Well, yes. I mean, the people never win in terms of you always have smaller groups leading larger groups. And the thing to keep anybody from getting too much power is by not letting there be that much power. The problem is that you have different political factions who either fight over who gets to control the political power and the political largesse, or who agree, even worse, who agree to cooperate and to, you know, wash each other's back, to basically to so that everybody gets what they want except the taxpayers.
Yeah.
And then you have a situation, you know, today where people don't blink about the fact that they pay over half of their incomes in taxes. It's something that's normal. And as this is the way that government creeps, you know, there's like been called mission creep when, you know, you go into Iraq and you keep changing the reason you go into Iraq. Well, there's the same thing. Government does that everywhere. They change the reasons. I mean, look at the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. It was originally supposedly to save gas. And then they figured out, after doing some studies, that it didn't save gas. So then they changed their reason for it. It was to save lives.
Right.
You know, they do this with everything.
Right. In the end, it's not really the abuse of power. It's the power to abuse. If it's there, they're going to use it.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a great quote.
Yeah, I stole that from Harry Brown, who I think got it from Michael Cloud or something.
Okay.
I love that one. Hey, I saw this thing. I'm trying to remember if I got this on a link from your site or not, but I found this thing in the News Observer, at the newsobserver.com poll. Many Americans still believe Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. From
the majority in the latest poll.
54%, it says.
Say that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. And, you know, that just shows you that the Bush White House was successful. They were overly successful to a point where you have David Kaye, who I used to watch and practically want to shoot my TV out listening to him just parrot the administration's line until he went back to Iraq and saw that the administration had been lying about everything.
It's a wonder that they hired a guy as honest as him who would come back and contradict himself like
that's
he did.
Right.
You know, Eric, I got to say, I'm genuinely surprised, perhaps even concerned, that our government did not plant weapons of mass destruction. I mean, what the hell were they thinking?
Well, that's, you know, it's interesting. Alexander Coburn said if it had been Lyndon Johnson, they would have found weapons of mass destruction in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah.
They would have stuck to their story.
Yeah, I mean, what did they let Doug Feith run this whole stupid war or what?
Yeah, well, you know, there is that aspect. You know, the leaders of our government may be malignant and even evil, but they are also incompetent. Just like they're incompetent to run, you know, the buses on a local level, they're incompetent to run these wars. They do not know what they're doing. And the exception is that they can do it right, not the rule.
Right. Well, and you know, for people who don't keep up with the news every single day because they just can't take it, and I would say if you're one of those people, it's to your credit. That's why people like Eric and myself exist, so that we do all the dirty work and fill you in on the details later. This war is not just wrong, unconstitutional, illegal, based on lies. This war has really turned out to be an absolute disaster.
Right.
Am I right? I mean, the occupation of Iraq is a mess with no perceivable way out.
It's a total mess for Iraq. It's a total mess for us in Iraq. And it is a total mess for our economy. It's going to be, we're looking at probably spending $6 billion a month for some indefinite period of time with very little result. We don't even know if we're going to get any good result out of this.
Yeah, I can't see one. The only result I can see, as I read that we've built 14 bases in Iraq, the only result I can see is the spreading of this conflict to Syria, Iran, perhaps Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Exactly.
And the longer our troops are there, the more likely it will be that they get to go somewhere else. And then won't that be fun to invade Iran and have all the Shia in the south of Iraq at our back? Boy, good luck, 18-year-old out there who signed up to sit in the desert.
You also, I mean, we are doing things that are going to create problems for us decades from now, even if we're successful. You know, a lot of people don't know, and this is one of the reasons that antiwar.com is very important, because there's so much information out there. But historically, in the 1950s, Iran elected a pro-Western, he was a socialist, but he was a pro-Western, democratically elected president. And we engineered a coup against him. Brought back the Shah's son, created an extremely repressive regime, which as a backlash, brought back a tendency in Iran that was basically on the way out, the Shiite Ayatollahs.
Right, it was really a very modern country at the time of the overthrow of the Shah.
Right, Iran was extremely modern.
There's a lot of debate about Iran now. John Bolton, of course, over at the State Department, taking the lead in war rhetoric against that state. And I've read a couple of different places about how I think it's the majority of the population of Iran is under the age of 30 and is ripe for serious reform. And so then the question is, Does American intervention help those who are trying to reform the government of Iran, or do we just discredit them by trying to intervene on their behalf?
It hurts them, and in fact, the reformers have denounced American intervention talk in Iran. You know, they don't see it helping them at all. And you know, we have continually kept Iran back in the 9th century, you know, over the last 20-plus years. And, you know, this is another thing, is that Islam, there are different tendencies in Islam. I'm not, you know, I don't want to get into all the details of the religion, but the fact is there are different tendencies. And the Islamic fundamentalist tendency in most areas of the world was on the way out in the latter part of the first half of the 20th century. And then the U.S. and Iran and Israel and some other countries decided that the way that they could defeat their oppositions in various parts of the world was to feed the small Islamic fundamentalist insurgency groups. That's why Mossad put money and energy into expanding a very small organization called Hamas as a challenge to Yasser Arafat, who they saw as a real threat to them. In fact, Arafat represented the most pro-Western faction of the Palestinians. And in Iran, you know, we've ended up backing the side that turned to the Ayatollahs. And in Afghanistan, we supported the side to fight the Soviet Union that produced Al-Qaeda.
So one intervention leads to another, leads to another, leads to another.
That's right.
And is there any way to call this off except to just say sorry and bring our troops home
all at
once?
Well, you have to call it off. I mean, there a lot of times you can't just, you know, when you pull out, things are not going to be nice and clean, and you can't always fix every problem. And that's one of the things. There's a great British show called Yes Minister, later Yes Prime Minister, and the bureaucrat always talks about how the politicians see a problem. Something must be done. This is something. Therefore, we must do it.
Yeah. Good enough. Hey, Bob's back on the line. He has another question for you. Let's try Bob.
Again.
Hey, welcome
I'm
back
sorry.
To the show, Bob.
Thank you very much. I hope you can help me out with this one because it's something that has bothered me for a number of years. I had two voluntary tours in Vietnam, so I guess that makes me a warmonger. But what has bothered me about this whole issue of Vietnam is that we withdrew from Vietnam under the auspices of a treaty that was signed in Paris between Lee Duc Tho and Henry Kissinger. And approximately 2 years after the signing of that treaty, the North Vietnamese, we were out of there. We upheld our end of it. We were out of there. The North Vietnamese violated the treaty. And in the 2 years following their invasion of South Vietnam, the communists exterminated more civilians. It was something in the neighborhood of 1.75 million people.
Hang tight right there. We got to go. We got to cut out to break, Bob. Hang on. We'll get back to Vietnam when we get back. It's the Weekend Interview Show. This is a perfect rainy day song. I love it. It's pouring down rain in Central Texas right now. And I don't know if I was driving, listening to this song in the rain one time years and years ago or what, but this is the perfect rain song. I don't know. So anyway, I love capitalism, but it keeps interrupting my show. Before the break, we were talking to Bob, the caller, about Vietnam. The guest is Eric Garris, the director of antiwar.com. And before I turn this question over to you, Eric, the first point that Bob made was that if he fought in Vietnam, then he must be a warmonger.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that.
I wouldn't say that. I would say if you loved fighting in Vietnam and you thought it was great fun, then maybe you're a warmonger. But no, the fact that somebody's in the army doesn't make them a warmonger. Of course not. And, Bob says he hasn't gotten a chance to ask his question yet. So, Bob, the show's almost over.
No,
so wrap up here real quick, Bob.
I heard the question. You were asking about the treaty, the Paris Treaty, and how the North Vietnamese basically didn't follow it.
It wasn't that they just didn't follow it. I mean, they exterminated almost 2 million people 2 years after they violated the treaty. And my question is where was James?
Are you saying that Pol Pot and the North Vietnamese? Are you blaming the North Vietnamese for the Cambodian 2 million?
It was a combination of the two. It was the Cambodian
thing. The Cambodian thing was clearly a result of carpet bombing by the United States in Cambodia that led to the fall of the Sihanouk regime and a replacement with a group that had previously numbered no more than 100 people, these great Pol Pot people. But they were not allies of North Vietnam, and it's just ignoring the facts to say that they were.
To answer your question,
because we only have a couple more minutes,
okay.
Henry Kissinger engineered that treaty in order to help Richard Nixon's political position, and that's pretty much accepted these days. But the problem comes not from that treaty, but from the treaty after World War II, in which we decided to turn over all of the old French colonies back to France because they had been occupied, when we should have gone ahead and let them be independent. They would have been able to develop on their own and very likely would not have gone communist in the first place.
So the problem wasn't that we pulled out of Vietnam when we did and the way we did. The problem was that we intervened there in the first place when it's thousands of miles away from our country.
The problem was that we intervened after World War II to give the French control of these colonies that they had no right to control.
Absolutely right. And, you know, Ho Chi Minh was trying to cozy up to us, and his Declaration
That's
of Independence
right.
was
well,
taken almost word for word from ours, wasn't it?
American and thought that he, you know, during World War II, we gave him a lot of money, and we thought he was going to be our ally, but politics in 1946 forced us to stab the Indochinese in the back in order to satisfy Charles de Gaulle.
Well, and the thing here that, Bob, by the way, if you'd like to continue this discussion with me, my email is scott@weekendinterviewshow.com, and I'd be happy to communicate.
My email is egarris@antiwar.com or eric@antiwar.com, and he can also call me.
All right, so we can continue that, but I just want to say that history doesn't begin on any certain date where our intervention ended too soon. You can always rewind and find where we probably shouldn't have been involved in the first place. Thanks a lot, Eric, for coming on my show, everybody. Eric Garris, he's the director of antiwar.com, which you need to read.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for being here. All right, everybody, it's the Republic Broadcasting Network.